Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Capital Market Series with the New Gen Mindset Podcast. Nick, it's Friday. Daylight savings time is back, whatever that means. But it's starting to get warm outside, which is nice. And I think the market is kind of turning too a little bit, at least on the small cap side.
Look at the attention of the small big guys are getting, but I think that's just because people have been so used to it for so many years of just chasing the same stocks. But people always forget, you know, like the small cap space is really where, one, so undervalued. Two, it's where you get a lot of the innovation and the ideas to kind of moving forward. And three, there's a lot of stocks out there, companies out there that are kind of working in environments where it's heavily underdeveloped, a lot more upside. They're not looking at massive overblown debt situations like first world countries. So, you know, people's perspectives need to change a bit and start seeking some opportunities that exist in different ecosystems.
Yeah, and that's why this growth sector and small caps is a big opportunity. So we wanted to bring a gentleman on today. It's a story we've been following very closely. I mean, I personally have been following this story for the last 2.5 years. And they're really changing the world, really helping communities in a very underserved part of the world get access to telecommunications. So with us here today, we have the CEO, Francis Letourneau from Neuron Wireless. Ticker symbol is NUR. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to exchange a little bit on the business and the market and the potential and so on and so forth. This morning, it's Friday. It's beautiful out there. Let's kick off the weekend in the right way.
So, Francis, the first thing we always like to kind of do at a company is get a sense of who the person is that represents the company. So tell us a little bit about yourself and then give us a little bit of backstory on your end at the same time.
Okay, thank you. So myself, Francis Letourneau, I'm the CEO of Neuron Wireless. I've been with the company for 20 plus years, handling multiple sales and marketing positions within the company. Joined in 2003, so it's close to 21 years now. The company has gone through various changes, but back to me just a little bit. Before that, I was working for TELUS Communication, that you know well. So I've been in the telecom space and technology space for almost all my career, mainly in sales. Now I'm doing way more. So yes, sales, because when you're CEO of a company, you have to sell your company because you need to bring investors, you need to talk the story, you need to do a bit of buildup on this front. And we're getting there now. So we'll get into that in a minute. But Neuron is the I would say the evolution of 30 years of engineering skills that turned into a product oriented to meet the rural demand for connectivity in terms of mobile communication, and a recent shift that has happened in 2020, where the company, having built products for a couple of years, decided to switch and become a service company. Now, today, what we do is we build mobile network infrastructure on the back of mobile network operator as an extension of their network to cover the uncovered area. So you can view us as a tower company that does the extra mile, which is to manage the active equipment. So we build, own, and manage mobile network operation. So we do a little bit, some of you will know about the American Tower, Crown Castle, Helios Tower, IHS Towers. So we do a little bit like them. So we build this infrastructure, but we put the active equipment because this is our background. And this is where we see a lot of the value of Neuron, simply because owning the technology allow us to get better and better and better. And if we simply look at the past year of stats that we've generated from our Cameroonese operation, because we mainly operate in Africa, there's a massive business opportunity there. But just as the revenue increased by over 50% in the last year, most of it coming from the fact that we own the technology and we've been able to react quick to adjust and improve the network elements that we have put out there. So Newrand is, of course, IP or technology centric, but does all this infrastructure dealing with the largest mobile network operator in the world, namely today, MTN and Orange. In Africa, in seven countries, we have been able to sign seven contracts for 4,600 sites. A site is the whole thing, the tower, the power, civil works engineering, fence, satellite communication, our radios, and we manage it on 10 years contract base. So that's mainly what the company in a quick overview is about.
When you look at Africa, though, it's pretty impressive because there's over a billion people and they're still like not even connected to the internet or, telecommunications and stuff like that, which at this point, I think everybody realizes just how important it is right now.
And you can't deny it. And I don't think anybody can really deny the fact that Africa is extremely underdeveloped. And that kind of falls into the problem and at the same time, the solution that Newrand kind of fills in as a gap.
So people that are listening are probably scratching their heads too, saying, well, wait a minute, why wouldn't Rogers or Bell for Canadian listeners or AT&T or T-Mobile, why don't they just go in to Africa and develop these things? Like, why don't they just come in? Like, why does Newrand have to do that? So how do you sort of address that question, especially for newer investors that are like, wait, why would I look at Newrand to begin with?
Yeah, so you have four incumbent operators in Africa, four large ones, namely MTN that I've described earlier, Orange, that was formerly known as France Telecom. And there's two others, Vodacom, which is the African branch of Vodafone. So for those who follow F1, you will see Vodafone everywhere, outlined, and Airtel, an Indian company in the telco business. Why Newrand? Simply because if you look at connecting rural Africa, it's a tough environment to play with. So you need to have a really well-suited and well-developed solution for the rural market. Things have to run on solar energy, because there's no grid out there. There's nothing to connect your radio to make it work. So it has to run on solar energy. So the technology that has been developed by Newrand was extremely low power consumption type equipment. The largest power consumption that we have on one of our equipment is the equivalent of a light bulb. So 60 watt on average allow you to connect 5,000 people in a 5 to 7 kilometer radius. This is the technology that we have developed. So why the mobile network operator or the incumbent are not pushing on rural on top of this? It's mainly because most of their budget and their investment goes into the rural space. You know, for going from 2G to 3G to 4G and now 5G, and bringing all of those application, they call it OTT, over the top type application, and the other thing is mobile money. So this is where they concentrate their budget, they concentrate their capex, and they don't invest much in the rural space simply because their overhead and their cost deploying infrastructure is extremely high compared to us. So on average, they will deploy infrastructure for 100K plus per site. We do it for less than $25,000. So this is how you can build the economics that makes sense. So Newrand brought in a technology that overcome multiple challenges. One is the power that I just talked about. The other one is the bandwidth usage, because if you install it in the middle of nowhere and there's no power, you can bet that there will not be any fiber optic either. So all the communication back to the core network has to be done via satellite. Another feature or another IP that we have developed is this the satellite optimization feature that we've included in our core network elements that allow us to drop by a factor of 10 the usage of the bandwidth. So a typical call on 2G is usually 30 kilobit per second in terms of bandwidth usage. We do it with 3.43 kilobit per second. So instead of paying like $1,000 or $1,500 of satellite connectivity for a site, we pay less than $200 today.
So it's really just the numbers, right? The economics behind basically your structure and what they're able to do. Because my understanding too is a lot of these towers or traditional off-grid sites, they have to get operated by either natural gas or diesel, and that obviously increases the cost. And because Africa, I mean, let's just be on, let's call a spade sun. A spade, there's always sun there and it's really hot, better to use solar. It's not winter like it is up here in Canada essentially. Mm-hmm. So there is that cost advantage as well, right?
You have a lot of sun, but you also have a lot of rain, but they have massive rainy season. So you need to provision your site in terms of energy properly, especially running on solar and batteries. Mm-hmm. You need to provision it properly. But even if you would like to do truck rolls to distribute diesel fuel, you won't be able to do it. The sites are hundreds of kilometers away from the big cities. So in order to have a truck roll to support multiple sites, it won't work. So you need to run on solar energy. So your solution, and it's a major, major, major challenge. And this is something, part of our technology development that we have done to overcome those challenges that make our solution unique and really well adapted for the challenge of rural Africa. So, and because the operator were not investing there due to their overhead, their cost and everything, they decided to let go. They decided to pay fines for not fulfilling their license regulatory obligation instead of investing in rural. So Neuron comes with the technology, the way to make it profitable, and help them to fulfill their obligation. And we invest, we keep the asset, so that allow us to have perpetuity of the asset over infinite timing. So that allow us to serve those customer. And the other thing to mention too, mobile network operator intends to walk away from infrastructure ownership more and more. So they concentrate, they are big marketing companies oriented. It's really user driven type business. And this is where they put all of their energy and effort. So people like us, or the tower cos and the likes of IHS, Helios, American Tower, Crown Castle, those kind of guy, we filled the gap that was unfilled before, like connecting the 350. There's people living in rural area in Africa is above 600 million people. And I would say more than 59% are not connected today. So this is how big the market opportunity is. And if you just take this number, you divide it by population around 5,000 people, you get a lot of towers to be built in the next few years. Our objective is to build 10,000 of those. We've not gone really fast today because this is there is a massive need on our business model to bring capital to build those assets. But once those assets are built, they're generating revenue with a fairly decent gross margin. Our calculation present like a 75 to 78% gross margin and up to 50% EBITDA in full operation. Why? Because the technology and the type of site that we do deploy are extremely lean, allowing us to reduce at the maximum the VSAT usage and all the cost. So we made it economically viable and we drive it quite nicely. And right now we're on the verge of bringing a lot of capital to the business case. And with this capital, we'll be able to realize our dream moving forward.
I want to touch on the towers a bit and the NAS. So first thing I'd like you to do is explain the process of actually putting up a tower, and then what is NAS so people understand the NAS?
Okay, so NaaS is Network as a Service. A lot of people are familiar with SaaS, so Software as a Service. So we kind of invented that word, but you can view us as well as, because Network as a Service refers to the equipment. We are more, I would say, Infrastructure as a Service, because we go from the ground up to the radio and we manage the whole thing. So we could then invent a new acronym called IaaS instead of NaaS, but NaaS is easier to pronounce than the other one. So we decided to go that way. And it's funny because when we kick off that brand or that new way of doing things, our competitors have been using the same terminology. So from the ground up, typically a tower takes from when we pack the bill of quantity up to where we have a site live could take a couple of days, okay? And what we do, we put out towers, 10, 15, 20 meter tower with the radio, with the satellite equipment, with the solar power system, as well as fans, civil works, engineering. This whole thing takes a couple of days. So like 3 days max to have all of those builds. Of course, from the time it take off from the big cities where we leave the warehouse and we get to the site, it takes sometimes days, and it could even take weeks to get, like in Congo. If we build site in the north of Congo, the only way to get there, you have to take the river, the Congo River, and it could take 3 weeks to get your material up to where the site is. But typically, building a site is 3 days. Digging the holes, pouring concrete, or sometimes we don't use concretes on some of the sites, and then erecting the sites, putting the power tower, testing the sites and everything take around 3 days to build. Usually a team can build two sites per week. And when we launch a, like I would say, a bill of quantity or a build plan, a team will usually leave with 10 to 20 towers to be built over a month. So that's usually how it's working. The recently announced 21 sites build resumption that we did, it will take maybe a month to build those.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, which I think is something important that people need to understand, is the fact that these towers, or not necessarily the towers itself, but the technology attached to the towers are malleable and can evolve based on how Africa itself evolves. So obviously if your infrastructure is like, is non-existent, you may start off with 2G, but the beauty of your towers is you're able to go from 2G to 3G to 4G, which is something that's important to understand because you're not fixed in that old wireless system. As Africa evolves, the technology can evolve with it, so you can follow its infrastructure development.
Absolutely. So we are built-to-suit type organization. So we will follow trends. We will follow the demand. So we made our solution in such a way that it can evolve from 2 to 3 to 4. 5G, I doubt it for the next couple of years because I don't think they will be streaming a Raptors game out in Africa. But this evolution is necessary. Of course, I would say 95% of the sites today are connected via satellite. So it makes it complicated and difficult to connect and to make it economically viable running on broadband. So that's why we've kicked off with 2G. But the technology that we have developed, Nick, allow us to move from 2G to 3G to 4G. So we have three products. The first one is a small one that has been co-developed with Facebook. At the time, Facebook launched a program called Telecom for a Project, TIP, and Neuren was retained as R&D partner to develop next generation product, which we did, and retained the IP. It's called OC2G. OC stands for Open Cellular, which was the work group in which we were involved. The other one is the Lightcell 1.5 product, which is the flagship product from Neuren. I would say 90% of the sites currently deployed are using Lightcell 1.5. This is a high-performing product, and it's about this big. For those who were familiar with the old phone books, It's the size of two phone books together.
You're talking about the yellow pages, right? The ones.
Yes, today we have our phones.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. I was a child, like early teens, when I kind of saw. After that, it's been a long time since I've seen one of those.
Thank you for reminding me of my age. So thank you very much. So it's about 16 pounds. So if you want to swap the products itself, it's easy to go up the tower and to change the box to move to a 2G, 3G, or 4G box. And the next generation product that we've launched and announced is called Lightcell XG. This one have the capability to do 2G, 3G, and 4G. It's any combination of the two G's out there. And it's remotely upgradable.
Yeah.
So then this flexibility, and you can stack up to four of those boxes together. So we can update in terms of capacity, and we have the ability to update as well in terms of technology.
Okay.
And when we build from the ground up, because those boxes goes at the top of the tower, so you need to have a tower that is strong enough to support multiple of those base stations. So typically is, you know, the winds, the torque of the tower has to sustain surface reflecting the wind. And we usually over-provision the tower strength to be able to accommodate multiple of those radios on top of it.
So in a way, it's almost like it's kind of a vertically integrated operation. The only thing that you're really outside of your control is the network providers, which makes sense because they don't want to be in the tower business. They would want to be in, like you said, the consumer business. That's why there's all these branding campaigns, Rogers, Bell, T-Mobile, AT&T. Like, they don't want to touch any of that, but they know that they need to have access to that. So you guys pretty much are going to be able to control the entire process from the construction, the distribution, the installation, as well as adapting to the needs of the surrounding areas, right? So that to me itself is really interesting too, because you know, investors are always like, if you could vertically integrate everything, I mean, you're controlling your costs really well.
Yeah.
The current sites that you guys have right now, correct me if I'm wrong, I think there's about 160 that are live. But you guys have almost, I would say close to 5,000 now. Where are these sites right now, and how close are you guys to achieving sort of that milestone or that target?
So with all the communication that we've done in the past, aiming to build the sites and so on, it's all dependent on your capacity to raise capital, of course, okay? Because every site will cost on average $25,000. In a nutshell. So if we want to build 10,000 sites globally, part of our corporate objective, we'll need to raise or to generate internally up to $250 million US. Okay. So the build plan, or the most important thing for us now, is to raise capital. The recent announcement, we have received approval for a $5 million loan. This $5 million loan, we're in the documentation stage as we speak. And we have also received up to $67 million worth of letter of intent from various lenders in order to support the build plan that we're talking about. This $67 million could span over a couple of years, but this is where we stand. Of course, we're in the back of this previously announced EIB and the other DFI potential loan facility, waiting for the license in DRC. But bottom line, as I said, it's pretty capital intensive. So we will be in a build mode for quite a long time on that front. Dan, going back to yours, I drifted a little bit. Repeat the question, please, so I can answer this properly.
It was the locations.
Vertically integrated.
It was so. It was more the locations, right? Because yeah. Just my understanding is 165 that are live, so that's generating some form of revenue. But you guys have a target to get that to 5,000. Where are those locations?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Sorry, because I was going
Don't worry.
On the side.
You went off script here, ladies and gentlemen. That's okay.
Exactly. I'm not reading. Sorry.
We'll come back to it though.
The notepad is away. No, we have 4,642 sites under contract in 7 countries with MTN and Orange. There's 2,000 sites in DRC, 1,000 in Cameroon, 1,000 in Ivory Coast, 242 in Cameroon, 500 in Sudan, 250 in South Sudan with an option to do an additional 250. We have 500 in Madagascar and 150 in Namibia. Am I missing one? I don't think I'm doing. So they are spread all across. Most of the sites that we have today are in Cameroon and DRC. Of course, they were the first contract that we signed. We have operation in country, so it's easy for us to build up on those numbers. But we are in the process. So the core network element has been deployed in Madagascar and soon to be in Ivory Coast. And it's done in South Sudan as well. So you will see site being erected in 2024 in those 3 regions quite soon. We're also continuing to build the pipeline with MTN and other MNOs. So you might see some new contracts kicking in as well that will get us to be closer to the 10,000 sites build that we want to do. We have published an outlook of the number of sites that we would like to see built in 2024, 2025. This outlook is extremely aggressive, but also highly dependent on the financing that we're going to bring. But just this $5 million that is about to be closed is going to support the deployment of 600 sites. Why this one is important in terms of milestone? It's simply because once we reach 600 sites from our expectation, and we are reaching those expectations in Cameroon, we should be at EBITDA positive.
So just so I understand
major
this,
milestone for a company like
just so the listeners understand this, because again, this is all public information right now.
Yes.
But the economics behind a tower for one of your towers is pretty straightforward. It's the CapEx is $25,000 just to build it. Great. The OpEx, maintenance and all that fun stuff, just taking care of 6,400 bucks per year, and then yearly revenue is about 21,000, right? So if my math is correct, that alone could just, those 600 towers alone right there are able to generate 12.6 million. That's just basic, the USD, right? Now, you mentioned something earlier, and this was probably in the press release, I think at the beginning of this week with the financing, because you need capital to erect these towers and then build these things. But once they're set up and running, I mean, it's just going to generate a significant amount of inflow, but you're expecting that $62 or $67 million of financing that's based on, and it's written in the press release, could possibly fund at least 2,500 of these sites.
Yes.
So that assumes 25,000 times 2,500, that's approximately $62 million. So is that what is potentially on the way to erect and basically scale this entire operation?
Of course, we need to close it. That's a challenge. But the type of organization with whom we work are dedicated to build infrastructure in emerging markets, especially Africa. So we have made significant progress. Now we're working with a couple of those to act as lead arranger for those facility. So we're in discussion with them to see who's going to lead and how is going to be the first package to be released, and most of them have the ability to top up on the $67 million. So we might start with a lower amount but grow as we go, and we have selected groups that could go fast and not work the DFI ways, so extremely slow. DFI is Development Financial Institution, for those who are coming to the story for the first time. Most of the funds with whom we are talking are not DFIs, so they have the ability to go faster with pretty decent process timing wise, and they have the ability to top up. So we could start with maybe out of this 67 facility, we might start with a 30, then top up to get to this while we are working on a second debt package. The cool thing about this is that you've said something important. So those sites on average should generate $21,000 USD per year. Okay. So just do the simple math. The cost of operating those is $6,400 per year. So you see what is the cash, the potential cash contribution to the build as well. Because once a site is live, it starts generating cash quite fast. And the cash could then be reallocated to build new sites. So the new rent operation are going to contribute to build phase as well. So we say 2,500, but as we go, we need to build 10,000. And part of our planning is overall, there will be a $100 million contribution of new rent operating cash to the build over the span of the 5 to 6 years to deploy this 10,000 site.
So if, go ahead, Dan.
I was just going to, just to wrap up this part, but for the lenders, I'm just putting myself in their shoes. If you're able to execute on this, this is a real estate play for them, right? Because it, like, yes, there's going to be an interest rate they're going to put on the loan, which is fine. That's like their dividend. That's just normal business. But for you guys, it allows you to scale the entire operation to pretty much get to where you need to be. And that probably means you're operating at about, I don't know, 30. I mean, blue sky scenario, you're operating at around a 30 to 40% gross margin, right? Just based on the math there. But it's, that's the incentive for most of these lenders. It's like, this is a pure real estate play, right?
Yeah, they see that they can be repaid because most of those players are debt players.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And what they need to see is a financial model that has the ability to repay the loan. That's it. And the cool thing, by the way, just wanted to make a bracket here. The LOIs that we got from various groups are at better terms than what we've had before from EIB and the DFI, which is really good. There's no cash kicker coming from the positive EBITDA after a little while. So we might have to make decision on where we go. Should we stick with the EIB DFI plan, or should we go with the new players, or should we have them to coexist together, create a separate structure in Africa to allow? So look, we're accumulating all of those options. We will need to make the best decision for NewRen and NewRen shareholders to bring value. But on top of this, the thing you need to know, we will need to bring equity as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of options on the table right now to bring equity at the African level, because we've created a structure where NewRen, the parent company in Canada, owns NewRen Africa Holding located in Mauritius. And this is where most of the money is going to go, because it's going to be spread across the various operations in Africa. So the money that we raise is mainly to be focused on the NewRen Mauritius entity, both debt and equity. And something important to know is the debt piece that we talked about, the 67 million or even the EIB or something like this, those guys are looking for equity partners to come alongside with them as well. So part of the covenants, you need to maintain a 65-35 debt to equity ratio on average. This is what we've seen. So 65% debt, 35% equity. So we will need to bring equity as well. Up to today, NewRen, the parent company, has contributed to the project up to $12 million of equity. And this is being counted in those loan agreements that we are shooting for. So that's why as soon as we get one of those loans to be signed, it's easy for us to draw down, to do initial drawdown, just based on the fact that we have invested already in the project, and there's 12 million equity in the mix already taken into account, and it will continue to grow. And one of the way we contribute in terms of equity is it's not sweat equity, but it's all the service that the parent company gives to the operation, like maintenance, not maintenance, but the NOC management, the procurement, admin, And so there's a lot of services cross-charge to the various opcos. And this is how the parent company makes money. But so far, we've been invoicing those opcos, but not being paid. So it has been seen as a contribution. And there's also been a lot of cash transfer to this operation to build up the inventory. We have in country now the equivalent of 260 sites to be completed, 160 something already done. So an extra 100 to be built just out of the inventory right now in the country. And for the rest, to build the 600 sites that I was alluding to, coming from this this $5 million facility, it will be for new builds. So we will be ordering parts. The supply chain has been all lined up. Clearblue Tech is ready for the power side. We have two or three different sources for the tower in terms of solution engineering or system integrator that we're going to be using, like the ecosystem that we have to build sites. Everybody's ready. We have contract ready to be signed on that front. And on our side, on the radio, there's no glitches whatsoever for the sourcing part. So we can turn around and deliver those sites quite rapidly. We have over 660 base station in inventory as we speak in Canada. There's 120, 250 being built as we speak in the manufacturing facility or available. So we're ready to go. As soon as this money gets in, boom, we attack. Go and we start building. Yeah.
So the last thing I want to touch on for the story is it goes slightly beyond the business of Neuren itself, and it's more about the social impact that you guys are now wanting to focus on, which is to kind of reinforce the community, help the community grow, and it'll indirectly impact the demand side, which will drive more business to Neuren. Can you talk a little bit about this social impact that you guys want to focus on now to kind of help invest in the communities around you?
In those business related calls, we forgot too often to discuss about the environmental and social impact of Neuren. First of all, the fact that we have invested a lot of money to deploy develop and deploy the lowest power consumption equipment for rural on the market. Allow us to be seen as a green solution. The carbon footprint is extremely low on this network. So and typically a tower will take maybe 3x3 or 4x4 meter space. So really reduced space. So the impact on environment is extremely little. And on the social impact, man, we're connecting people that have never been connected. So when you look at the basics rights today, compared to in the old days, I think telephony or being connected is one of the basic needs today.
You're bringing them into the 21st century.
Exactly. So they can now contribute to economy. They can contribute to productivity. They can contribute to a lot to not only the community, but their countries. And they then have access to e-health, e-banking, and so on and so forth. So they, out of a sudden, be part of the world.
Yep.
And this is extremely important. What we do is today's considered utility. If it's there, they will use it. And we've seen that. We've put the site out there in Cameroon, and since the beginning, it has just grown up. And we see the same thing now in DRC. We fixed a lot of the technical issues locally, and now it's ramping up. We've grown up more than 30% since September in terms of usage on our site. So, and it will continue. It's like this. And then once the demand is high enough, Floop will shift to 3G, and then 4G, and this and that. So this is, we're building or we're connecting those communities to the rest of the world. So the impact is big. Another thing, we launched when we were at MWC, a new
Where was this? MWC? Was this Barcelona? London.
Yeah, MWC, London. Sorry for the people. It's Mobile World Congress, powered by GSMA. GSMA is the organization behind all mobile network operator. It's the biggest telecom show in the world, held in Barcelona every year. It's over 100,000 attendees, and I don't know how many exhibitors, but it's massive. It's the equivalent of 16 football field.
Pretty massive.
In terms of space. So it's massive. Yeah. So we launch a product line called Solstice. Because when we install sites, of course, when we turn it on, people have phones and wants to use it. But Solstice is a charging, it will be a complete brand in terms of power. But the first launch was Solstice 18 and 24, and those are charging stations. So we will be charging phones, allowing them to use the service. But since it's not really our core business, once the investment is fully paid for, the profit generated from the charging station operation are going to be reinvested in the community. So you were talking about social impact. This is something that we want to do. So from that, we will probably create a charity or a foundation out of this. And we have started to engage with some partners, including the likes of MTN and Orange, to team up to give back to the community into certain programs that we will define in the future. A lot of this will be aligned towards empowering women in their local communities. So, and of course, schools, and then so on and so forth. So social impact, Nick, you're big onto it. And the charging station is our way to give back to community that are giving so much to us.
Something I want people to understand about this, the importance is because there's a trend now, you're starting to see a lot of African countries start to reject Western nations who have kind of only been there to take advantage of them.
Especially on the mining side.
Exactly, you know, and to see a company that's wanting to be the baseline or the infrastructure starting point to these rural areas that have no development, and to see them want to reinvest into the community, which reinforces their business model, reinforces the sustainability component of that business as well, is obviously a validating point, because it's something that just allows you to see there's a horizon to this business and not just something that's quick and out. So it's nice to hear this, and it's nice to see that because it's important. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, kids can now go to school, they'll be able to have access maybe potentially to YouTube and learn and education tools online. So it's really connecting to the first 21st century and connected to the internet where most information is accessible. So once they have that, the potential for Africa to flourish and really wake up is the byproduct after.
Voilà.
It's very interesting. I mean, obviously, I think the blue sky scenario is you got to get those towers built, because that's going to fund that blue sky vision. So a lot of people listening to this probably new to the story for the first time. They have a general understanding. There's obviously been sort of, maybe there's some listeners right now who've been invested. They've been following the story for quite some time. They might be a little bit frustrated at times. It's totally normal, but like what's your message to the people who've known the story for a while and then to all the new ones? I mean, I think it's pretty clear what the blue sky scenario is right now.
Yeah. So look, we're not perfect. We've done mistakes. We launched this as a service back in 2020, have been able to accumulate contracts. We thought that it would be easier to bring this capital in to build, because the power of the business case and the profitability of the business case is quite obvious.
Yeah.
But we've been dealing with large organizations that don't go the same the same speed we go, or they look. So
there's been a lot of uncertainty over the last 2-3 years.
Yeah, but
world.
Not only this. Right, Nick. So if you look at the market, and if you look at Neuren stock price, the stock price did the same as the CSE downslope curve. But our ability to deliver has been severely impacted by the speed to bring this capital in. When we did the private placement in 2021, we went really fast to acquire material ship it to country. Remember, it was COVID days.
Mm-hmm.
It was really hard to get containers and things like this and pack it up
Correct.
And ship it there. So we decided to massively ship products there because that was one of the biggest challenge. And we were counting on probably a stock price to go up to be able to have our shareholder to exercise the warrants so we can bring additional capital to continue to build. Guess what, guys? The stock is the market started to go down. Then we announced EIB and the other DFI mandate letter that led to approval. But when we announced that, we should have done another private placement. We were to a place where, okay, the warrants were in exercise. Let's do a private placement. We decided not to do it because we were told by those DFIs that the process should do fast. We should be done and sign and maybe draw down around Q2 of 2022. Guess what, guys? It didn't happen because there was this large debate about the licensing issues that is being resolved today because we applied on the large infrastructure license. So there's always been delays and delays and delays, and it has been extremely frustrated for shareholders, of course, because they were seeing the stock price going down, but also for us,
yep.
because we didn't have the proper ability to
Crazy.
Build our dream, right? Yeah. So right now we're at the point where the shift in priority that we've done last summer, hiring some VP corporate development to bring all of those new investors in the mix, have been extremely fruitful. If you look at the recent news flow, so we have this 5 million knocking at the door now, and we have another set of lenders for $67 million that we are working with to pack up the best approach for us. And we are accumulating some equity partners for the African sub. So bottom lines, we're with this 5 million, it's not the big 25, 26, 27 million we've been looking for, but it allow us to get to EBITDA positive. So that's a positive point. So why today? Why looking at the story properly? The numbers that we should get once in full operation is fantastic. I will give you quickly, I don't want to put numbers in your mouth. I was talking about the fact that we're comparable to a tower co business. We were not American Tower, okay? But the tower co business, the multiple, the EBITDA multiple at which they trade today varies between 6x EBITDA and 29x EBITDA. What we've announced as our 5-year plan was 10,000 sites, generating $200 million of revenue yearly with 50% EBITDA. So should we hit 6x EBITDA in terms of company valuation? Make your own math, gentlemen.
I was actually just doing the calculation while you were speaking. So, I mean, look, I don't want to sound overly excited because obviously there's a huge challenge ahead. You got to get these financings in, which seems right. Like the progress has been going really well, but the reality is when there's about four, Nick, if there's 40 million shares outstanding, this stock has the potential to be out of $5, I think, pretty quickly.
Plus,
if everything falls into place, of course. Right. I mean, blue sky scenario,
and the market
risk
has to follow. We can still see a Ukraine impacting markets. Mm-hmm. You can still see a lot of things
world.
Happening. But look, if you look at the business today and its outlook in terms of potential, the 5 million will probably show in the next months how the company could evolve to that EBITDA positive situation, demonstrating this potential of 50% EBITDA moving forward. And this is just going to stack up, but I doubt that it's going to go really fast to this X amount of dollars per share. We will need to show results. We will need to show multiple quarters in a row with positive numbers. We will need to show build plan being executed on time and this and that. So this 5 million is the first step to something way bigger. So,
At the same time, it's rare to see a business model in the small cap space where you have a clear kind of pipeline and a clear idea of where the business can go and how far it can go. And at the same time, people also need to remember most first world countries are overblown, too much debt. Markets have been completely blown out of the water with these prices. And then when you're looking at these underdeveloped countries like Africa, for example, you have things like the New Development Bank, which is a bank built out by the BRICS system, which is all about building out infrastructure in these underdeveloped mm-hmm. nations. And Africa is going to be a beneficiary of this. And Nuran being part of this infrastructure build out, to me, is just, I see more upside than downside from an economic and infrastructure standpoint. So this definitely falls within a thesis of the way I look at investing in infrastructure and communication, which is part of the way I invest. So it's definitely a fascinating story.
Well, pressure is on, Francis. I think we know what needs to happen. But it's definitely an exciting story, because at the end of the day, I think what you're doing is it's going to impact a lot more.
Changes lives for lives people. Yeah.
That I think most people anticipate. So I want to wrap things up here, but where can the listeners find you? Where can they find Nuran as well?
NuranWireless.com. We are extremely active in terms of press releases. We're traded on the CSE, ticker NUR. We're also 1RN in Frankfurt, as well as NRRWF on Pink. So find us everywhere. Just watch us go. I think you will see a lot of good things happening in 2024.
Well, I think with rising copper prices and silver prices, the demand for any type of tower is going to be pretty substantial. So we're going to see what happens. Look, full disclaimer, I am a shareholder in this story. So Francis, I am rooting for you guys. And, we're excited to see the recent developments as you guys continue to build those out. But get those towers done, and I think you're going to have a much bluer sky than a lot of previous investors have been looking at. So, Nick, anything else to add before we hop off here?
No, just, think of things that are at the bottom that have a lot of upside rather than things that are overblown and have a lot of downside risk. Yeah. That's just how I would look at things now. That's it.
Francis, thanks so much for coming on here. And we really appreciate you taking the time to explain the entire Nuran story to our audience. Really, really appreciate it, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
And we'll see you next time, guys, on the Capital Market Series.
Ciao, guys. Take care.